It's loud, yearns to make your people proud. Yuvi Amma, Yuvi Amma, Yuvi Amma. Our song of Ka'an. A chance to come and share with you has raised our hopes of love times two. As we go off in our separate ways, he's gonna wing this better day. Yuvi Amma, Yuvi Amma, Yuvi Amma. Our song of Ka'an. The power's in you to make a sound. Create a beat that's from your heart.
My People by Bomua. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Multiple news organizations are reporting the Biden administration's preparing to formally approve a massive oil and gas development in northern Alaska known as the Willow Project. Approval of the $8 billion ConocoPhillips development is expected to be announced today, greenlighting the drilling of some 600 million barrels of crude oil. Climate activists and many indigenous groups had urged Biden to reject the project, warning it'll create a carbon bomb. In advance of approving the Willow Project, the Biden administration also announced on Sunday steps to reduce oil drilling in other parts of the Arctic. This includes barring future oil and gas leasing for 3 million acres of federal waters in the Arctic Ocean and limiting drilling in a further 13 million acres in the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska's North Slope. Kristen Monsell of the Center for Biological Diversity criticized the Biden plan, saying, quote, protecting one area of the Arctic so you can destroy another doesn't make sense, and it won't help the people and wildlife who will be upended by the Willow Project, they said. We go now to North Pole, Alaska, where we're joined by Sikinik Malpan, executive director of the Sovereign Inupiat for a Living Arctic. It's great to have you back. Thanks so much for joining us, Sikinik. Can you talk about what you understand is being announced today?
Well, recently on Friday afternoon, the Bloomberg report came out saying that there was speculations that the Biden administration will approve a three-pad plan instead of the five-pad original plan. And now we're hearing that he will make his decision Monday at about 9 a.m., but we're not for sure.
While campaigning in 2020, then presidential candidate Joe Biden said, quote, no more drilling on federal lands, period. This is candidate Biden responding to a question about his position on drilling in the Arctic.
Yes, he made
and
a
I
lot
think
of-
I'm the only one, maybe not the only one running who's been up in the Arctic Circle. I've been, remember the great oil spill that occurred? And I watched when I went up there and I went up in a helicopter up on the North Slope and saw what was going on and saw what was happening as the glaciers began to melt and how the caribou and everyone, I mean, there's a lot going on up there. And it's a real gigantic problem. And by the way, no more drilling on federal lands, period, 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 period. Well, the Arctic Circle is a disaster to do that.
So that was candidate Biden. And again, the little part we missed at the beginning of what the candidate said was, I'm completely, totally opposed to drilling in the Arctic. Sikinik Malpan, describe this project. What is the Willow Project and what you understand President Biden's announcing today?
Well, this is the biggest oil and gas leasing project that's on public lands right now. It is a massive project that would be happening in the North Slope. Closest community would be Nelset. And this would completely encircle the community in oil and gas, which already has Prudhoe Bay, Alpine. And this is just the start of the project, because this could green light for further exploration, further development, and this project would emit so much carbon, it would actually double the amount that Biden had promised that he would reduce. And so all of his plans to reduce the CO2 being released would be nullified by this project and then putting back double what he said he was going to reduce.
And can you talk about why you've invested so much time and energy into protesting this and the two parts of the plan that's being announced today?
Yes, we, I want to say personally, I've been trying to fight this project for about 4 years. And on a more personal level, my mother lives in Nokset. My family is from Nokset. And although I wasn't raised there, I have a deep connection and love for the community. And in 2018, I was invited to go to an air quality monitoring system planning session. And currently, ConocoPhillips owns the only air quality monitoring system in place in Nokset, and they also own most of the research that is quoted for the safety of this project to go forward. So we went over the top 10 pollutants that are put out by ConocoPhillips that's required to be put to the EPA, and what the possible impact is from being exposed to those pollutants, like cancer, respiratory illness, and other things, even changing the sex in the womb of a child from male to female. And in that session, there was community members, the youth council, and a lot of us realized that we had seen these occurrences in our family. We had seen increase in cancer, respiratory illnesses. And in 2012, there was a blowout, a Repsol blowout, and that caused one child to be medevaced from the village, another one to have permanent health problems with their respiratory system. And many people have complained recently there was a gas leak near Nokset in the Alpine field, and they didn't evacuate the village. They said that they were fine, but many people self-evacuated because children were complaining of nausea, headaches, and not feeling well. And so currently there is no plan put into place to help evacuate or keep the community of Nokset safe. And as I learned more about this project and its impact, not just to the community and the public health, but the climate impacts were significant. The Arctic is warming at four times the rate than the rest of the world. And while many people speculate climate change, we're living it. We're seeing in the Yukon River, they haven't been able to fish for many years, subsistence fishing. We are seeing caribou that are showing signs of starvation. We're seeing fish pop up with mold. And this project is going to accelerate those issues and create food insecurity and many, many issues that is not just going to affect Nokset or the eight communities in the North Slope, but the entire Arctic itself. And then, of course, globally, it's going to affect people for climate change. And so this project, we're concerned about for those reasons, but we also want to transition away from oil and gas. And this will lock us into oil and gas for the next 30 years. And so, and we wouldn't actually see any of the benefits economically for 10 years. So this would be something that, you know, a catastrophe for Biden, who had promised that he would transition us into clean energy. And what is also concerning is that systematically, we've seen that small rural places like this, time and time again, coal, gold mining, have had been in an economic hostage situation where they're told that the only way that they can get basic necessities like running water and plumbing and such is to sacrifice their health, their lands, their food security, and so many more consequences from this project.
Former U.S. Vice President Al Gore, longtime environmentalist, told The Guardian, "The proposed expansion of oil and gas drilling in Alaska is recklessly irresponsible. The pollution it would generate will not only put Alaska Native and other local communities at risk, it's incompatible with the ambition we need to achieve a net zero future. We don't need to prop up the fossil fuel industry with new multi-year projects that are a recipe for climate chaos. Instead, we must end the expansion of oil, gas and coal and embrace the abundant climate solutions at our fingertips," he said. Now, according to the New York Times, Willow would be the largest new oil development in the United States, expected to pump out 600 million barrels of crude over 30 years. Burning all that oil could release nearly 280 million metric tons of carbon emissions into the atmosphere. On an annual basis, that would translate into 9.2 million metric tons of carbon pollution, equal to adding nearly 2 million cars to the roads each year. The United States, the second biggest polluter on the planet after China, emits about 5.6 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide annually, the New York Times wrote. So, yes, environmental activists across the political spectrum are calling this a carbon bomb. Sikonik, talk about ConocoPhillips and who pushed this project forward.
ConocoPhillips has a huge hand in everything that happens in Alaska, politically, locally, in the public education. And recently, Rosemary Atungarok, the mayor of Nuksed, put out a letter with other council members and the president of Native Village of Nuksed as well, stating that this project would be detrimental to the people there, but it would also be a huge climate mistake. And as we've seen, we can't have a project go forward like this and meet the global goals to reduce carbon emissions. And so we're looking at this project and President Biden, and we understand the political ties that he has with Murkowski, who is someone that crosses party lines, that has that is a Republican, that really wants this project to go forward. And so we believe that he's not making logical choices or choices that are best for his constituents and people, but he's making a choice based off of pressure from political leaders, our congressmen, that are not representing Alaska well, because as you stated, there has been so many things happening in the Arctic that have been reckless, and this project would only further exacerbate those issues, like the 12 villages that need to be relocated immediately in Alaska due to climate change, erosion, and there's no federal funding for this. So for President Biden to greenlight this project, he would really be going back on so many of his campaign promises, but also putting our world at risk of having less of a chance to mitigate the challenges we're facing because of climate change.
Well, Sikkenik Mappan, I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of the Sovereign Inupiat for a Living Arctic, speaking to us from North Pole, Alaska. Next up, senators grill the CEO of Norfolk Southern over the company's toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Stay with us.
When you see something that you love a lot crash and burn into sand, you won't pick it up, you won't take it home. But you can't fall through hands. Can you see? Sadness in the air. Can you believe it's coming after me?
Sadness in the Air by Faye Webster. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. 5 weeks after the Norfolk Southern train disaster in the small town of East Palestine, Ohio, the company's CEO, Alan Shaw, was grilled on Capitol Hill Thursday about the February 3rd derailment and so-called controlled burn that blanketed the town with a toxic brew of at least six hazardous chemicals and gases, including vinyl chloride, which, when heated, becomes phosgene, the World War I chemical weapon. Shaw testified before the Senate's Environment and Public Works Committee just days after the third derailment of a Norfolk Southern train in the U.S. since that derailment in East Palestine. This is part of the exchange with Democratic Senator Ed Markey.
Am I correct, Mr. Shaw, that last year Norfolk Southern made $3.3 billion in profits?
Yes, sir. And last year, we invested over $1 billion in safety. And last year, our accident rate, our number of accidents, was the lowest it had been in the last 10 years. Our safety stats, Senator, continue to improve. And I am committed to making Norfolk Southern safety culture the best in the industry.
Well, you're not having a good month. You're not having a good month. And it seems like every week there's another accident that Norfolk Southern is a part of.
During his testimony, Shaw also faced questions from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders about covering the health costs of those impacted by the toxic derailment.
You talked about covering the needs of the people of East Palestine. Does that include paying for their health care needs? All of their health care needs?
Senator, we're going to do what's right for the citizens of—
What's right is to cover their health care needs. Will you do that?
Everything is on the table, sir.
The Ohio Department of Health reports East Palestine residents continue to experience headaches as well as coughing, fatigue, irritation, burning of the skin after the train derailment. Many remain unsatisfied with the Environmental Protection Agency response, and much of the testing that was carried out by contractors for Norfolk Southern featured in a video the company posted online.
Sarah Burnett is a toxicologist with CTEH, an environmental consulting firm. She's one of dozens of scientists in East Palestine helping answer those questions about air quality.
So what do you say to them? What is that answer?
I say to them that we have detected no vinyl chloride or other constituents related to this incident in the air, and that all of our air monitoring and sampling data collectively do not indicate any short or long-term risks to them, their children, or their families.
But a recent ProPublica expose published with The Guardian cited independent experts who said the tests were inadequate for detecting the full range of dangerous chemicals possibly unleashed in the derailment, failed sample the air long enough, and did not prove residents' homes were truly safe. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Louisville, Kentucky, a state that neighbors Ohio, Monica Unseld is with us, a biologist, environmental and social justice advocate who studied the health impact of endocrine-disrupting chemicals used in plastics like those released in East Palestine. She is the founder and executive director of Until Justice Data Partners and co-lead for the Coming Clean Science team of environmental health and justice advocates focused on the chemical and energy industries. And in Albany, the capital of New York, Judith Enck joins us, former EPA regional administrator and president of Beyond Plastics, whose recent New York Times op-ed is headlined, "Why has the EPA allowed the horrific situation in Ohio to continue?" She also wrote a Boston Globe op-ed headlined, "The East Palestine disaster was a direct result of the country's reliance on fossil fuels and plastic." Welcome you both to Democracy Now! Judith Enck, let's begin with you. Talk about what you think has to be done right now with East Palestine, and then what you think caused it. I mean, you were the EPA regional director in this area. What should the government be doing, and what did Norfolk Southern do wrong?
Well, the government needs to do so much more, starting with, why are we producing so much vinyl chloride? That is used for one purpose, and that is to manufacture plastic, PVC plastic. And so part of that is risks associated where the manufacturing takes place, mostly in black and brown communities in Louisiana and Texas. You put this vinyl chloride on the train tracks, we know that there are, unfortunately, many derailments a year. And so this accident happened. I question whether it was smart to drain this known carcinogen into local ditches and set it on fire without evacuating enough people. The evacuation zone was only 1 mile by 2 miles, without putting testing in place. And then just a few days later, lifting the evacuation order, telling people that it was safe for them to return with very limited testing. Dioxin testing didn't happen until a month later, after pressure from the public and media cycles calling out the EPA. And then, unfortunately, the EPA asked the polluter here, the rail company, to do the testing. And the dioxin testing, I think, is far too limited. We need surface testing inside people's homes. Most people spend most of their time indoors, and volatile organic compounds, other contaminants will settle on people's kitchen counters, rugs where kids crawl, furniture. None of those surface areas have ever been tested. The reason I think we're seeing this problem is because the EPA is deferring much too much to the state of Ohio. And starting today, I think they need to turn the page, assert more leadership, and put public health protection front and center.
I mean, it is unbelievable that it wasn't the government that did the so-called controlled burn, right? It wasn't involved with it. It was the company, and the company paid the testers as they assured everyone that the whole area is safe.
Well, it's not unusual for the EPA to have contractors do some of this testing and monitoring at federal Superfund sites, for instance. But this is a unique situation where people need to have trust in government. EPA should have been doing this themselves.
But wasn't Norfolk Southern paying for the testers?
Yes, it was their contractors, and sometimes EPA went with them to observe. I think that was a mistake. EPA has scientists. EPA has toxicologists. They should be in the driver's seat here, not Norfolk Southern.
And this issue, let me bring in Monica Unseld, of vinyl chloride and the chemicals that were released in this. We have to be very clear. There were three people, one a trainee on this train, just three Norfolk Southern employees. And the train was more than 2 miles long. And that's not one of the longest trains of Norfolk Southern. What chemicals were released?
Good morning. I'm not sure we know. We know of dioxin, we know of vinyl chloride, we know of a few others. My concern is, do we know of the mixtures? What is happening when these chemicals react with other chemicals, especially when you're doing a controlled burn, or those chemicals are encountering other chemicals within the soil, the air, and the water? And I think this leads to a bigger issue of why the EPA and the federal government are not screening these chemicals before they go to market, and why the EPA and the federal government for decades have allowed industry to say, trust us, trust the science, when they really mean their science, or they say that they're going to do the right thing. I think we have decades of research to know and evidence to know that they're not going to do the right thing. And under laws like the Toxic Substances Control Act, the EPA does have more authority, but they're not taking it. So we can't test for these chemicals. With proprietary information laws, we may never know everything that's carrying, the trains are carrying across the continent. So my concern is we may not know what really happened here for years.
And what does vinyl chloride do, and what happens when it burns?
It's used mainly in plastics, particularly PVC and plastics that are used in building materials. When it burns, it can create toxic gases that can be very dangerous for people. I know we're looking at the acute effects of coughing and burning, but I don't think we know the long-term effects, because those will be at doses so low that we don't know the health effects. The dose response curves don't look like normal toxicological dose response curves. And so we may not know the health impacts of burning vinyl chloride.
Mm-hmm. And the dioxins, explain what endocrine disruptors are.
Endocrine disruptors are chemicals that at low doses, which are typically lower than what our thresholds at the regulatory agencies are, at low doses, they're either mimicking or acting as a obstacle or blocking our natural hormone systems. So they can act as an estrogen. Most of them are estrogenic. Some are obesogens, where they make it very difficult to lose weight. They've been linked to cancer, behavioral issues in children, learning differences, diabetes, rises in infertility rates. They really are a public health crisis that we've sort of Jurassic Parked our way into. Because, for one, we're not screening the chemicals, but we're also creating new chemicals that the planet has never seen before. And we don't have the testing that's sensitive enough to determine whether or not they're in the water, the air, or the soil, and what they're doing in our bodies, particularly when they're mixing together.
And how long do they last?
Some of them are persistent, so they won't dissolve in water. So some can go for months, but some can stay for years, particularly if they're in fatty tissues. And we know with our indigenous tribes in the Arctic, their diets, their cultural traditions, they are getting a lot of these pollutants like dioxin, which you can mainly get exposed to through food, in the fatty tissues of their traditional foods.
I want to go back to the former EPA regional administrator, now president of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enck. Talk about what plastics have to do with all of this and what has to happen at this point.
And the accident that took place in Ohio, because five of the train cars that's causing the most damage contained vinyl chloride, a human carcinogen that was declared a human carcinogen back in 1974. And we have to ask ourselves, is plastic really worth the risk? Businesses tell me all the time that it's cheap, but it's not cheap. Because what about the human suffering and the economic damage of just what, you know, we're in the very early stages of dealing with this toxic train derailment in Ohio. What about the human health impact and economic cost of people living in communities where plastic is manufactured? Most plastic doesn't get recycled. It's mostly a 5 to 6% recycling rate. A lot of it winds up in the ocean. Scientists tell us that within the next decade, for every 3 pounds of fish in the ocean, there will be 1 pound of plastic. So I argue that plastic is not cheap at all. And yet, because of the fossil fuel industry, because of the chemical industry, not because of what we want as consumers, plastic is forecast to double in the next 20 years. That would be an enormous problem from a climate change perspective, environmental justice perspective, and our own health. Now, there are some states and local governments that are taking action to reduce the demand. In New York State, for instance, there's an important bill being debated in Albany called the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Act, which would cut packaging in half over 10 years and would also ban really toxic chemicals like vinyl chloride. The science on plastic is really solid. We know that people have no choice when they enter most American supermarkets. They want alternatives to plastics. What's missing is the political will to break free from the grip of the chemical industry, the plastic industry, and the fossil fuel industry that are all united in pushing more plastic onto the marketplace. Unless these change, I'm afraid we're going to see more East Palestinians in our future, more climate change, more adverse health impacts. And this is all because the Congress, state lawmakers in some states, and the Biden administration just refuse to stand up to the plastics industry.
You are calling for, started a public petition, your organization, Beyond Plastics, for the EPA to ban the use of vinyl chloride. So what is the replacement for that? And talk more about the effects of vinyl chloride.
Well, vinyl chloride has immense health impacts, even when it's not in train cars and being purposely set on fire. It is a human carcinogen. It is used for drinking water pipes, for instance, where you can use copper. It's used for packaging, where you can use refillable, reusable packaging, or packaging made from recycled material like metal, glass, cardboard, paper. It's used for toys. The iconic little yellow rubber ducky that floats around in children's bathtubs, that's made from polyvinyl chloride. Let's just ditch that ducky and have toys that do not pose a risk to kids, especially when they're chewing on the plastic. There's an abundance of alternatives to polyvinyl chloride plastic and many plastics. It's just it's just a matter of political will, as I said. Just as we have fuel efficiency standards for cars and appliances, it's time to have environmental standards for packaging, which is a giant part of the plastic picture.
Judith Enck, we want to thank you so much for being with us, former EPA regional administrator and president of Beyond Plastics, and Monica Unseld, biologist and executive director of Until Justice Data Partners. That does it for our show. To see all our coverage of East Palestine, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Watch all our shows online at democracynow.org.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.